Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. You're listening to Talk with Tercio this very cool morning here in Southern California. And joining me this morning on the air is three-time world ballroom champion and organizer of Cruising with the Stars, Sharon Savoy. Yet again, you know who she is. And Sharon, so happy to have you back on the program again this Wednesday morning.
Good morning, Eric. I have a little piece of interesting history to bring up this morning.
You do? Well, please.
Yes. On this day in 1995, Ginger Rogers died at the age of 83.
Oh.
So kind of a nice memory of one of our icons.
A nice memory.
Yes.
You know,
and you know that she never was formally trained in any ballroom style at all. And yet she's, her and Fred are the image of what we think of when we think of ballroom dance.
You know, so many people from choreographing for them or students that come in that are new, they say that they want to learn how to dance or look like Ginger Rogers when doing the foxtrot or the quick step, because they were so famous for their quick little soft shoe numbers and then bust out into a foxtrot or a quick
yeah.
step.
Well, she had a great performance face and personality, so she went beyond the steps, and I think that's a little bit where we're going in our discussion today of what it takes to have the judges notice you on the competition floor, whether you're an amateur or a pro.
Exactly, and we have many people that are just tuning in. You're listening to Talk with Tercio, and Sharon Wood joins me live on the air. And Sharon, why don't we start with that? When you are announced to walk to the judging panel or to the competition floor when they announce the judges, and you have that clipboard in your hand, and you know they announce, you know, heat number 154, cha-chat, what is the very first thing that you are looking at in the competitors?
Well, you know, it's very interesting. Judges discuss this, whether the competitors realize it or not. And you are taking in all the information from the moment the couple walks on the floor. So there's a lot of things that we're assessing. How does someone walk on the floor? What do they look like? What does their grooming look like? Because obviously, the closer that an amateur looks like a professional, the more we assume that they have the same skill set. They may or may not, but the look is a lot of ballroom dance in competition. So how someone looks, what their dress looks like, is their hair done well, and their confidence in their walk, how they just, you know, present themselves onto the floor is a huge part of our quick ability to have to assess somebody's skills. Because sometimes there's a lot of people on the floor, and sometimes, you know, there's very few. So very few gives us a long time to spend concentrating. But if you have a ton of people on the floor and you have to pick for the next round, the moment you walk on the floor is when we start assessing and judging what it is you're bringing to the table.
And that's so interesting, because so many students will ask me, well, are they really looking at the way I'm standing before the music starts? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, you know, if you think about someone walking on stage, right, the moment they walk on stage, they are in a proscenium that puts them on a platform that we watch. People should approach the dance floor the same way, that they, the moment their toenail hits the edge of that wood floor, they are performing, and they are, quote-unquote, on. So, you know, that sense of being alert and vibrant and ready for the music, that kind of anticipation of energy of what you're going to be dancing, all of that directs us to you, to your energy as a performer on the floor in a positive way. Someone who's fidgeting or just, you know, thinks that he or she doesn't have to really start to dance until the music starts, that's not exactly accurate. So we see that energy if you're presenting that to us, and we are drawn to it like anybody is who's even watching. So you need to use that to your advantage when you walk on the floor, to realize that's a moment where you can capture our attention in a good way.
And out of, you know, all of each dance obviously has a different energy. And say, you know, let's talk a little bit about the beginner dancer who's just starting to compete. What are your expectations of the beginner amateur as far as, you know, dress or clothing-wise, dance steps? But what are you looking at? Are you looking at them the same as you would if someone who may be an open bronze dancer?
Oh, absolutely not. Each level we expect more from the person who is competing. The newcomer on the block, we know that it's just probably incomprehensible to them how much tension they're feeling, and they had no expectation of that for their first time competing. You know, you're at the studio, you're practicing, everything's relaxed, and then, you know, it's like deer in the headlights for your first competition. So we realize that they're going through this possible trauma. Some people don't, but most people have an unexpected, you know, oh my gosh, I'm competing, I'm fried, I don't remember my steps. So we completely understand that, especially with a newcomer. The more advanced, even, you know, bronze to silver student, each level we're expecting a little bit more sophistication and a little bit more practice and experience with knowing what it's like to go on the floor and handle nerves. Go ahead.
It's funny because I competed 2 weeks ago with one of my very, very, very new students, Rebecca, and she's on the dance show in 3 weeks, and then she decided to do a competition.
Three weeks?
Said,
wow!
Well, normally I wouldn't let someone who's on the dance for 3 weeks get on the competition floor, but the whole studio was doing it, and she wanted to be a part of the team. I said, well, listen, you're going to do, you know, the very, very basic, you know, beginner level, and you'll do a minimal amount of entries because, you know, I didn't want to traumatize her. And we're out there, and the music's playing, and it's cha-cha. And instead of doing cha-cha, she starts doing the rumba box. She was so, she just froze up, and she's looking, and she's going, I forgot. What is this? What are we dancing? And by the time, you know, she figured out, you know, side rock step, cha-cha-cha, because I'm trying to get her to do the preparatory step, stepping out on the one, the music was over. You know, let that just be your get your nerves over with number, and then the second time around, hopefully you'll pick up the timing. But, you know,
well, she threw herself into the deep end before she knew how to dog paddle. But I applaud her. I applaud her courageousness. I do. I think an interesting thing that you said about how fast the music goes and the experience goes. We spend so many hours rehearsing and practicing, and then the moment feels like it happens in a flash. It's startling when you have that you know, perception of being out there. What's also interesting is the better you get, the more the experience slows down and you actually get to savor the moment you have on the floor. Mm-hmm. That takes, you know, a few rounds, a few years, I think, also of feeling comfortable in the dance, comfortable in your skin, comfortable in performing, and then you have that space between the notes to actually milk and enjoy, not only for the audience, but for yourself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was. I know she did get some first place awards in her high school.
Oh, good for her.
And some of the other dances that were a little more fast. I'm working on slowing her down because she's a high-energy girl. You know, I see her all the time. Every time she walks to the studio, I feel like she's going to rip the hinges off the door because she's so excited to come into play. She just opens the door wide open. She's like, I'm here. So she's very enthusiastic, and I think that's something that people need to show more of on the competition floor, because some people have these stone-cold faces, and even these open gold dancers that are amateurs and they're dancing with their teachers, you know, after they turn and they hit a line and they look at a judge, it's like, you know, bullfrog face. They get so intense.
You couldn't be more correct, because one of the first things we look at is, in theater, what you call the emotional center, but basically from the sternum up. And that's where people express from. So their upper body, their arms, and most specifically their face. And it's not until someone is kind of deadpan that we actually look down at their feet. So if all the stuff is going well in the upper body, meaning the arms are good, the frame is good, and the pleasant look on their face that is appropriate with the music is there, we kind of make an assumption that the lower half is correct also. And so just the simplicity of a smile and a relaxed look gives the viewer the perception of the person is in command and has a lot of confidence. And whether they do or not, it still is like an illusion. So I would, if I were you, have all of them practice, not just for the performance, but in your sessions, to always approach a run-through as, you know, kind of an on performance, and to practice their facial demeanor as well as their cha-cha or their back rock or their waltz, promenade chasse.
Right. Right. A student yesterday said that he listened to our show last week. His name is Jack Liu, and he stopped me before I was leaving the studio and said that he really appreciated the inside information that he's been able to get out of our show about the amateur dancer and the expectations of dancing, because he competed for the first time as well last Saturday, and he did very well with his teacher. And you know her, Natalie Wakefield.
Oh, Natalie, of course, yes.
Yeah, Natalie was his teacher. And so we were all on the floor together. So he says that, you know, it's good to get some inside feedback. So I'm happy that we're talking about this.
Well, Natalie's very experienced, as I'm sure most of the teachers are. But one thing I can tell you that new teachers need to be aware of, because the students can't help them here, new teachers make the mistake often of not rotating their basics. Now, that sounds so simple, but for me, I call it, it's like digging your own grave when they do the rumba box and they don't actually turn the rumba box, and it's like creating a trench with their footwork. They just go back and forth and back and forth in the same line. The two things that they're missing are, first of all, we can't sometimes see their number, because if they don't turn around, it's very hard to find what number they're wearing. But more importantly, the skill of just rotating a basic box step is more visually just accomplished to the eye. So it doesn't look like you've learned this pattern and you have cement shoes on. It looks like dance. As soon as you rotate forward side together, back side together, there's a pleasant circular pattern that, you know, flows over the feeling of what the person's doing, and it just doesn't look so regimented. And it relays to the audience and to the judge, they're more accomplished. So I would suggest to everyone who's listening that they always turn their basics, and it will improve their performance perception a lot of what we're watching and what we're seeing.
Well, I think a lot of people who step out on that dance floor think that they need to have, you know, the best, the top choreography and the syllabus for whatever their level may be, but you know, we're really looking at and how we're judging it are just clean basics overall. Someone who is doing, you know, all this, you know, flashy stuff, but maybe off time or maybe a little stumbling at some balance, versus someone who's just sticking to the first four or five steps in the syllabus and dancing them cleanly and well. Wouldn't you agree?
Particularly for the first several years and the lower divisions, we need to have the basics just honed and drummed in, so that they ultimately become a muscle memory that is very well done. And after that, after you can, you know, walk on your feet, feet and have the correct placement, the correct rise and fall, the correct rotation, the correct lead and follow, then you can add all the fancy stuff. Until then, really it's going to distort your basics. And all we do is it takes away from what you need to be concentrating on to improve as a dancer. You know, even a pianist works on their scales. A musician does that every day. A singer has to do their vocal scales to sing. So as dancers, we too must repeat our basics, even all the way up to the professional level. Most pros start with rumba walks just to warm up, or feather steps. You know, it's just a way to kind of organize the muscles and get ready for the day. And that is how an amateur all the way up to a gold level student should approach their work, that the more they can improve their basics, the better dancer they're going to be.
Mm-hmm. It's that constant rehearsal. I think that goes for, you know, everything that we do in life. The more practice we give it, the better that we will get at it.
And then the more relaxed we are to actually enjoy the movement and then, quote unquote, perform it when we get onto the competition dance floor.
You know, and so, and some people dance very differently. You know, we talked about dancing in the studio and it's very light and it's easy. And then the minute, you know, someone steps on the floor, they tend to go in another place. And they're not used to all of these people dancing around them. And maybe when, you know, a competitor on the floor does a crossover, you know, they hit their arm, the student may, it just throws them off. What advice can you give in regards to that situation?
Well, your social dances at the studio are a great way to practice floor craft because, you know, when you're there during your day for your lesson, it's just not as crowded and no one is exactly doing the same dance at the same time that you are. But the social dances, when you have to maneuver around a group of people, are kind of a mini competition flavor, meaning how do I move around the floor? How can I adjust? How can I immediately follow maybe a new pattern out of order, out of context, and still look like I have a continuity of dancing? So I think your social dancing is the perfect environment to, you know, have the practice of a competition floor without the pressure.
And that's extremely important because, you know, in our studio, Century Dance Sport, in Tustin, every Wednesday night we have dance parties, and we're always encouraging students to come to the parties, even those who are, you know, in silver level. And you know, there's always that stigma, Sharon, and you know what I'm talking about. When a student has graduated to a higher level, and sometimes you feel like, oh, well, I don't want to dance with some bronze people, or I don't want to go to, you know, a group class, or I don't want to go to a dance party because I'm a silver level competitor and I dance with, you know, you can't even pronounce the name of the person. you know what I mean. So my
well,
theory is if Eric Tercio, it's not Russian, it's not something that's too hard to pronounce. But, you know, it's like they don't want to come down a level, and that's so important.
Well, two things. I would suggest that person lead, whether they're male or female, lead someone who is a lower level than them and test their leading skills, test their ability to actually transfer the information of what their step pattern they're trying to lead to someone who may or may not even know that pattern. So rather than have it be something that, oh, they're condescending to dance with someone lower, view it the opposite. Are my skills at a level, then I'm actually a good enough leader to lead someone who is a quote-unquote lesser skilled dancer. Am I good enough to dance them around the floor? I would put the challenge onto them to improve their leading skills. And it's a great thing to do as a man and as a woman because particularly for many women, if you have not experienced what it's like to lead as a man, as soon as you do, you realize what your teacher is yelling about, meaning don't lean on my arm, pick up your own body weight, move yourself across the floor.
You know, I'm laughing so hard right now because I had this exact conversation with two of my ladies who are very serious about dancing. They compete at least twice a month.
Good for them.
So, yeah, it is. It's great for them, and it's really improved their dancing significantly. And so, you know, I will have marathon lessons with these ladies, and I'm not complaining. You know, I love dancing with women, and I love being able to show them sexy steps and making them feel and look sexy on the dance floor. But I just can't handle all of their weight being thrown on my left arm. So
exactly.
I have to tell them, I literally have to push them away from me. And I get a little dramatic about it, but I'm just doing it for the fun, you know. And I just break away from the frame. That's it. I just can't dance with you. And they go, why? Why? What did I do? I says, well, you know, you're putting all 125 pounds of you on this side of my body, and it hurts my neck. I says, now you're not heavy by any means. You know, physically, you know, you look great, but when you throw all your body weight onto one side of the body, and you know, to the leader's body, it hurt. So I made her take my position, and I put myself in hers, and I did exactly what she was doing to me, and she's, wow, that hurts.
Well, that old expression, we don't know what it's like until we're in somebody else's ballroom dance shoes, applies completely. Really, I think that the experience of knowing what it's like to take the opposite person's part is a huge eye-opener, very educational for everyone.
And it's great because there's a girl that comes to my group class who will do the man's part. Because sometimes, you know, we're short on men, and
men.
I'll say, all right, do any ladies want to be followers? And then my eyes will look directly at her leaders, and I'll look directly at her because she's like, okay, I guess I'll be a man again, you know. And it's great for her, and I told her last night, I said, it's only going to help you dance better.
Absolutely. Your perception of what the other person is trying to communicate, and then you're having to be that communicator, and then when you're receiving that information, it's much more clear of either, oh, that's what they mean, or I'm not reading it correctly. So, it's just a fabulous experiment to do, to try the opposite side. And I think that's no different than in a relationship, trying to see someone else's point of view. Truly, that's all it is.
Exactly. And it's trying to see someone's point of view, sometimes silently. You know, when you're in a dance frame and you're competing, you have to be able to feel that person's body. And maybe you can talk for a couple seconds about this, because especially for what you had to do with theater arts, when you're performing on stage, you're not always able to talk to that person, but things can happen, right? You have to be able to allow
your body
to be available.
You can't really talk at all because I'm in the air, so it's about a 3 feet difference down. But no,
yes,
you may be
able
obviously
to talk to Jesus, but
that's right.
Being so high
dear
up,
Lord,
my God,
help
Karen.
Me in this lift.
Exactly, but we have to make ourselves available. At least the ladies do. They always have to be available.
Well, I love what you said about nonverbal communication. That is the ultimate experience that we're trying to reach as dancers, to have this harmonious communication where we are actually really talking to each other, whether it's on the dance floor or in the air on the dance floor. There's such subtlety. I used to do a move where I stood in arabesque in the palm of David's hand, and there would be imperceptible little adjustments between my ankle and his left hand that the audience really didn't see, but we were extremely communicating with each other. And the funny part about it is when we first learned the lift, it felt like the Keystone Cops, that he was like running underneath me, and it was just absolutely manic and terrifying, to be perfectly honest. But those communications got lesser and lesser and lesser, so the adjustments became imperceptible to the audience, and but a lot of information was traveling through our bodies. And the same thing, of course, with less risk is happening in ballroom dance hold. Tiny little minutia adjustments and conversations we're having with each other constantly as we're moving. And honestly, if you tried to speak to someone, it would disrupt that, and it would be far too late to help. So you get very skilled at talking to each other through just minor feelings through the body and through the side of the frame.
And, you know, it's one thing that we always try to really learn more about are each other's bodies, especially in a partnership. And I know with my professional partner, that's one thing that we're always trying to learn more about, because every step and every piece of choreography that we get is different. And so our body and our muscles are going to move differently, and we're going to react differently, especially in the beginning when you're first learning a step. So we're trying to adjust and readjust to one another, and that happens often, wouldn't you think?
Oh, I do. And also, when you brought up the point of choreography, when you're first learning as a student or even as a young pro, you have to be open to trying other people's ways of moving. What I mean by that is a choreographer comes in, and really they usually give you material that suits them. Okay. Ultimately, as you progress, you will find, ooh, this person's choreography suits me. And you will tend to move toward getting more lessons and more coaching or more material from that person because it's a fit. Other choreographers may have brilliant stuff, but it just doesn't feel right on your body. Ultimately, if you can choreograph some material for yourself and you have that ability, I find that people, obviously that's like putting on a glove of your own skin, and that's the most comfortable that most performers are. But we're talking way down the road there, when the person has trained long enough to then have the artistic interpretation that comes from within, that, ooh, I want to do this here to this piece of music. And that takes quite a while. But at the beginning, we have to be willing to try on many suits of clothes and see what fits.
That's so true, especially when I moved out here to California a year and a half ago. I had gone through several wonderful, well-known, well-respected coaches and judges. And out of the many that I've seen and have worked with, even at my studio, two of them are the ones that I find for my body make sense. And although, you know, the other coaches had given me some great stuff, it looked good when they did it, but when I had to do it, it just, in my muscle, in my, wherever the feeling was, it just didn't feel always so correct. And so I found that two out of maybe the 15 that I worked with, I've really gravitated towards, because, you know, they make sense to me, and it's a male and female. Because I think that's important.
And it's not like the other 13 don't have absolutely fantastic material. It just doesn't suit your body as much.
Right.
That's all. And you'll eventually discern that as you grow as a competitor, and as you make your own decisions in your own career. But students should not have that opinion. Students are too new, too young. They have to be willing to try all those different like suits of clothes on, and then ultimately say, oh, this fits, and be guided by the teacher to find that looks best on you. Because unless you're willing to try something that's not comfortable for you at the beginning, you will never grow as a dancer. And it actually should be viewed as a wonderful opportunity to expand the crayons in your crayon box. Oh, wow, I've never tried purple, or I've never tried this step. And, ooh, yeah, I'm not there yet, but in 3 months, maybe I will be.
You know, I'm so happy that you brought that up about, you know, students and their opinions. Because, you know, I mean, everybody has the right to their opinions, and here I go. But as a student, they come in the door and they pay the big bucks for the professional to lead and guide them. And sometimes, you know, we have students who come in and they think they are, you know, the owner of the studio or the teacher. And sometimes I have to, you know, look at this person. I will not say their name on the air, and say to them, you know, okay, so why are you here? And they'll say to me, well, what do you mean? I'm here for lessons. I says, all right. I said, and who in this room is the teacher? And so you.
Yes.
I said, thank you. Shut up and get back in the dance frame.
You sound very Max-like all of a sudden, Eric.
I guess the Max can come out of my little toned Max body, but you know, it sometimes can be frustrating because, you know, we're the professionals and we know how our students should look and what looks good on them.
And you have people who are walking through the door who are possibly very advanced in their career, used to being the boss of their company, and
yeah,
they are paying for your expertise, but they're not used to being out of control. And
right,
it's an adjustment, and you might be younger than them, and it's an inverse relationship for them. So it's an adjustment to trust someone. But they should, because it's your field. It's your field of expertise.
Mm-hmm. And lastly, one thing I want to talk upon, and thank you for that advice, because, you know, sometimes we as teachers can get a little frazzled when our students go off the deep end. But how important is it, Sharon, for students to be consistent with their lessons? Because sometimes, you know, they think, oh, well, I just did this competition and I want to take a couple weeks off because I'm tired, or I just did, you know, two showcases, a team match and San Diego Dance Sport, which is coming up in June.
Yes.
So that's a little plug for Wendy Johnson. Hello to you, Wendy.
Hello, Wendy, yes.
How important is it for students, even at the social level, to be consistent with their lessons?
Well, my opinion is this: unless you have a family matter or are injured, consistency is the key to improvement. So kind of hopping in and out of something is like, you can't go on a diet permanently, but you can eat well pretty much almost every day of the week and have a dessert here and there. If you go on your diet, off your diet, then you have yo-yo swing dieting. So it's the same thing. We can't do yo-yo dancing and expect to build upon our past lessons and improve. We really need that consistency and the repetition to be able to take those minuscule inch steps forward that we don't even perceive, because we're just repeating and we're getting more comfortable, more muscle memory. You know, we have the four levels of learning, and we have to get to the fourth level where we don't have to think about what we're doing all the time. And that takes a lot longer and a lot more daily, weekly, just kind of using the body in those patterns so we don't have to think about it when we get on the dance floor. And once a week is hardly enough to build a skill set. You know, you didn't go to school once a week, right? You don't go to your job once a week. So if you want to get good at something, it has to be a lot more hours and dedication put into it.
Mm-hmm. Ever so important. And even if you're trying to learn a particular step that you know, you had trouble with the first 45 minutes, and then you leave for a week, it's like coming back the next week and having to relearn it all over again.
You're actually wasting your money. You would actually do better to have a more concentrated, and if you did a combination of group and private so you could practice those new steps, or stay in the studio, come to the social classes, come to the social dances, and give yourself just time to soak in what you've learned. I often ask students to write down what they've learned, because doing another application of your senses for learning. So we learn visually, we learn kinesthetically, we're learning physically. If we sit down and write it, even if we never look back at our notes, I find that people have a tendency to remember the new step more.
Yes, yes. Consistency is the key, and it goes for everything.
Absolutely.
Not just dancing. And lastly, today, Sharon, Dancing with the Stars, our dear friend Gladys, who we've been talking about for months, she was now let go. And I have to say, I was so sad.
But it was actually, thank goodness she was there till Motown Week. How perfect was that?
Yeah.
And it was, you know, just fantastic to see the Temptations and all the performers. It was a very special night, I'm sure, for her to have her friends singing with and for her as she danced on the floor. I mean, what a heady experience. It must have been like deja vu for her.
Yes. I'm going to have Gladys actually on the show.
Are? When is this?
Well, we're still in the works on having it, so it'd be great to have you join us.
Oh, I would be honored to be on the show with her. She was a delight, and she just lit it up with her smile. And, you know, she did a fabulous cha-cha. It's just Roshan was better, let's face it. And what was interesting about the duel, we had the youngest and oldest competitor going against each other. So that was an interesting dynamic, I thought.
Yeah, it was. So we'll have her on, and then, of course, hopefully Corinne will be a little free to talk about her experience after Dancing with the Stars
yes.
as well. And of course, you know, she's doing Cruising with the Stars.
Mm-hmm. Really ramping up for this. A lot more people are calling in and are interested in finding more out about what we're offering and what kind of classes and what levels, which we are doing everything from beginner to advanced. And she will be teaching a few hours every day, so people will get a chance to experience her wonderful star celebrity expertise and knowledge.
All right. And what's on the rest of your agenda for today? Because I always love leaving off the show knowing what you're doing.
Well, I just got back from teaching a ton of workshops in Phoenix, and I'm following up with a television show I did there called Forever Younger, and they did a segment about how dance keeps you young. And so I have to go back and speak to them about different editing things that they want to ask me my opinion about. And so I'm doing most of that this afternoon and then a little teaching tonight.
Great.
And you?
Great.
What are you doing the rest of the day?
Well, I have a hair appointment at 11, you know, because we have to move at noon. And then and then I actually will be going into the studio to get some new people coming in, choreography competition. So I always enjoy that. That gets
Oh, that's
going.
A very fun time. That is the best time because
yeah.
It's the honeymoon period for a routine. You have this excitement with new material, and it's fresh, and it just really revives your whole experience about dance to have something new to work on. I always love that part.
Yes, yeah. So I'm always excited about that. Well, thank you again for coming on. I look forward to next week and seeing what happens with Dancing with the Stars. And if you don't mind, I'd like to expand more on what we talked about on today's show.
We'd love to. Have a great day.
All right. Thank you, Sharon.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
And that was a three-time World Theater Arts Ballroom Champion, Sharon Savoy. Sharon, that was terrific. I say that on every show, but she is. And I think we all know that by now. We talked about, you know, the amateur dancer and what it's like to start off as a beginner dancer, walking in the dance studio, taking lessons, and the experience that the beginner dancer has competing for the first time. Sharon shared her thoughts about as far as judging and when she looks at the amateur beginner dancer and what her expectations are in regards to the dancing and how minimal it is. And then it gradually builds up as the student moves up to the levels. We also chatted a little bit about presence on the dance floor. We talked about connection and how each one of us, as either your leader or the follower, have your own responsibility of moving your weight and finding your weight within your dance frame and position and getting to know one another as dance partners in that regard. Also, we talked a little bit about consistency, how continuing your lessons are ever so important, that once a week just isn't enough. And that's something when you go back into my radio broadcast today, you'll hear Sharon talk about. You don't go to school once a week, and she's right. It makes perfect sense. We don't go to work once a week. I mean, I guess we could if you're fortunate enough. But most of us go to work 5 days a week, 6 days a week, sometimes seven. And we don't go to school. We didn't go to school once a week. So it makes sense to come to dance several times a week to continue what you're learning, because it's only going to make you better. And next week, hopefully we will have some of the folks from Dancing with the Stars actually on the program as well. So stay tuned for that. I'll have that posted on Blog Talk Radio. Of course, if you have any questions about the show, talkwithtercio@gmail.com is the email to get in touch with us. If you'd like to come on the show and share your experience, you are more than welcome to email us, and the producers there will get in touch with you. Again, that email is talkwithtercio@gmail.com. Thanks so much, Sharon Savoy, for joining the program. And before I sign off, I just want to give a quick little heads up. Ms. Wendy Johnson did a fabulous job with her choreography on Dancing with the Stars, the troupe, last week. So, Wendy, great job. We always love having you at Century Danceport, our studio in Tustin. And, of course, Wendy Johnson's competition will take place, San Diego Danceport Championship. That is the second week in June. So look that up. Google it. Google Wendy Johnson. She's fabulous. I love her, and she knows it. All right, signing off this morning live from Los Angeles, I'm Eric Tercio, and from all of us here at Talk with Tercio, have a great day.